Welcome to the FT Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Tuesday, the 24th of December, Christmas Eve, and I'm recording at 5:55 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, stock markets, well, the front runners here showing very persistent, consistent strength overall. Wall Street's up again here today. It hasn't quite finished trading, but I think we certainly see the tone here today. It's very steady overall. S&P's only up a quarter of a point, a little less for the NASDAQ overall. But the charts are so consistent. If you look at those, particularly on a weekly basis, and you'll see the sequence of several weeks that started more slowly earlier in the year, but more recently, in the last few months, we've seen 4 or 5 weeks of sideways ranging and then an upward break, one step above another. This shows that demand is still in control, but the higher these very, very consistent orderly trends go, inevitably the closer they are to an eventual a high of some significance. I wouldn't exaggerate the risk, but some significance will suffice. Now, what you'll see on the charts is something completely different when this move overall has run its course. But we'll have plenty of time to assess it. But in the meantime, we know that monetary policy is still a hugely positive driving force for not only Wall Street, but also for Japan, and also for the European markets, whereas we have the opposite situation in some of the other markets. But first, let's take the ones that are getting the strong monetary policy run to the upside. In an email that I discussed yesterday for Europe, I was dealing with the fact that this was not quantitative easing that was creating this environment, but just the extremely low interest rates that Super Mario Draghi, the ECB president, had instituted, and he has extended, or is in the process of extending, his 3-year loans to the banking community within Europe, and it's just led to a return of confidence and a gradual strengthening in those European economies. And certainly there isn't going to be any tightening of monetary policy for quite some time in Europe. And Europe has some of the cheaper stock markets that are subject to this very strong monetary stimulus. So I think we'll see further good gains from Europe in the new year. What will inevitably happen, though, is that we'll get some more volatility when Wall Street eventually runs out of momentum on this move. But again, the charts are so consistent that we should see it without much trouble when that process actually starts. Now, again, you've heard me say that it's now well over 550 days since we saw a 10% correction on Wall Street. That isn't going to go on indefinitely, but a 10% correction, I think, would be a healthy development here overall, provided we don't get too overextended on the upside before it actually occurs. The Japanese market, interestingly, again, it's a market we've liked all year and will like in 2014. We did see the Nikkei today just briefly push above that 16,000 level, which was also pushing above its May high when it had been very overextended and had the big downside key day reversal. I would be a little surprised if Japan ran sharply higher here in the short term. I expect to see that at some point, certainly in the not too distant future, in 2014. But I'll tell you what you can see on the charts here, that the Nikkei 225 is actually leading, whereas the Japan Topix index is just a lagging a little bit behind the Nikkei right now. And the TSE2, that's that second section index, which has been a leader on so many occasions, in both directions, I should say. But it's underperforming now, and it actually had been up testing its highs, a series of highs, going right back to May. But it's fallen back underneath the, I think it's the 3,400 level on that index. And so it just suggests to me that we'll probably see a little bit more backing and filling and consolidation on Japan. There's nothing sinister about that overall. I think it's remains a very interesting market. Now, what about the opposite extreme? Stock markets that are not awash in funds, but face more restrictive monetary policies. Well, we have India, which is up near its highs, nevertheless, largely because the central bank's been very successful in checking the slide in the Indian rupee. And it's now working to hold the rupee between 62 and 60 rupees to the U.S. dollar. And so that has certainly helped sentiment in that market. And also the interesting position prior to next year's general election, which has to occur by May at the latest. And Narendra Modi is the current front runner, and again, you've heard me mention him on so many occasions, written about him on a number of occasions, but the prospect of a chaotic structure such as we see in India, which has so much potential but has had governance problems for years, the prospect of that changing significantly is on offer in this upcoming election. And with emerging markets in particular, you know our adage on this, governance is everything. So subject to that election result, I think it could be, which I think Narendra Modi will win. And if he wins it with a sufficient majority, I feel it would be extremely positive for India. From sort of the second quarter of next year onwards. I think that with the stronger rupee and, again, a little bit better organization, if they can get some of their current inflation pressures under control, that economy should be on a much more stable footing overall. China certainly has a need for some easing of monetary conditions to really reinvigorate that stock market. I think we're likely to see it, but I've been surprised by the slowness in the Chinese recovery from these very attractive valuations. And it's down to politics, and I think the restructuring that the new administration is trying to put in place, and also their wish to cap some of the speculative excesses that they've seen, particularly in property markets. And that's the case here today. But as soon as we get any genuine liberalization of that monetary policy in China, and a number of China experts thinks that that's not going to well, that it probably won't be all too long before we actually see that, could create a very attractive environment there as well. In other Asian markets, I'd be wary of Indonesia, Thailand, and the Philippines. They've got soft currencies. They had performed spectacularly from really the fourth quarter of 2008 on up until May of this year. They basically overdid it, and they're in a lengthy medium-term corrective phase here overall. Let's see that all play out, and then their currencies regaining their footing at some stage down the road in 2014, and then I think they will look very attractive once again. Lagging sectors, mining shares, obviously around the world. I'm more wary of the gold shares and the silver shares because we still have some vulnerability in the actual metals themselves, and that could be the last hit to the downside. However, as far as the industrial metals are concerned, and what are we talking about here? Copper, zinc, lead, tin, nickel, aluminium. These show base building developments, and we're gradually getting a reduction in supply in those markets as producers cut back somewhat. I expect that process to continue in 2014, and I also expect that late cyclical catch-up move to take place. So I think that will be an interesting area as well for next year. We'll see some catch-up runs in the attractively valued, undervalued mining sectors overall. Now, moving on to long-dated government bonds here. The U.S. 10-year Treasuries, that yield has pushed up to 2.98 when I looked a few minutes ago. And so that really is approaching a retest of that early September high, which was near the 3%, just above the 3% level. And it's been moving upwards in an orderly fashion here overall. How concerned the Fed may be about that, I don't know. But I'd be surprised if they wanted to see another run to the upside here in these long-dated government bonds. But I'll summarize it again this way, as I have in the past, that if we see a sustained push above the 3% level, in other words, it's got to get up there and hold the move, consolidate, ranging around a little bit either side of the 3% level, and then pushing on higher, get up to 310, 320%, and I that will most definitely be a headwind for this somewhat overbought and somewhat overextended Wall Street, although it's not seriously overextended, and I would not call the U.S. market generally a bubble at all, but we do have some bubbly conditions in some of the most fashionable sectors, as I've discussed a lot in the last quarter. Okay, what about currency markets here overall? We've got the yen at 104.27 as I speak against the U.S. dollar. The dollar is very much range bound against the European currencies, because we've still got sterling here at 163.72. The euro steady-ish. I don't think the euro has all that much upside, but it's at 136.76 here right now. I think the ECB would be more concerned about euro strength than the Fed would be about a little bit more dollar strength come next year. And I, in terms of oil overall, again, we have ranging patterns which look likely to persist. I don't think this is a problem for the global economy at these levels. And currently 99.27 for the WTI, and a little bit firmer at 112 here for the Brent. But in the past, veteran subscribers have often heard me say that if we get spikes in the price of crude oil, that can be a game changer, and weaken the whole global economy. I'm hopeful that we can avoid that, but that's a guess and also a wish here right now. But I'm hopeful we can avoid that because more energy supplies are coming on stream, but also not least in terms of the U.S. fracking drive, but we need to see more fracking. If other countries were as enthusiastic as the United States has been in undertaking the development of their own shale gas and oil properties, and as the U.K. government sort of cautiously pretends to be, then I think that there would be very little chance of another spike in crude oil prices overall. But we do still have a fairly tight balance between supply and demand, as you know, and with the global economy improving, and it is improving, that will also lead to additional demand for crude oil. I've said for a number of years that this tight, supply-demand balance would be maintained, but as we move towards the middle and particularly the latter part of this decade, I think we will see a good deal more fracking, and that will help to lower oil prices, certainly in inflation-adjusted terms. And on that note, folks, it's Christmas Eve, and I won't hold you any longer. And all best wishes. Now, we are closed on the 26th. That's the Boxing Day holiday. But the next update of the website and broadcast will be on Friday. Meanwhile, all the very best to all of you.